Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Dr. Mish Hammer Kassoy discusses Vayetze. Dr. Mish Hammer Kassoy is a member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Director of Recruitment. And now, Dr. Mish Hammer Kassoy.
Thank you, Larry. This is an action-filled parsha. It opens with Yaakov's dream as he leaves from Haran, of the famous dream of the angels ascending and descending the ladder. It continues with Jacob's travel eastward and arrival in Haran, falling in love at first sight with Rachel, and his agreement to work for 7 years in order to marry her. At the end of those days, which felt like just a few because of his tremendous love for her, he found himself marrying Leah and then Rachel, and then working for Rachel for another 7 years. He has seven sons, the future tribes of Israel, and Dinah. And then he asks Lavan, "Send me away, Shalcheini." Lavan begs him to, or asks him to stay, and gives him the opportunity to name his price. And Jacob agrees to continue to work for Lavan in exchange for the speckled flocks. A mysterious and sneaky plot allows Jacob to flourish, and eventually raises the ire of Lavan's son and Lavan himself. At which point, Jacob feels it necessary to flee, and he does so. Lavan pursues, accuses him of stealing, searches through his things, and then finally makes a pact and leaves. One of the things that most characterizes this story and its allusions is its allusions to Brit Bein Ptarim, the covenant of the pieces, which, in fact, you really can't understand this story without. So that's in chapter 15, verses 13 through 16. There it says, "And he said to Abraham, 'You knew well that your offspring shall be strangers in a land not theirs, and they shall be enslaved and oppressed for 400 years. But I will execute judgment on the nation that they shall serve, and in the end they shall go free with great wealth. As for you,'" I think I can stop there. There are three key words in the Brit Bein Ptarim, in the covenant of the pieces. Ger yeh zarecha be'eretz lo lahem va'avdum ve'inu otam arba ma'od shana. You're ger, stranger, avdum, you will serve, be enslaved. Ve'inu, you'll be tortured, oppressed. And it so happens that all three of those key words are found with respect to Jacob's stay in Haran. Next week's parsha, actually, in the beginning of Vayishlach, in chapter 32, Jacob says to Esau, "Im Lavan garti, I have been a stranger with Lavan." And in the end of this week's parsha, he says twice, he uses the other two key words. He says in verse 31, 38, and forward, 20 years I have spent in your service. Ze esrim shana anochi imach. Your ewes and your she-goats never miscarried, nor did I feast on rams from your flock. That which was torn by beasts, I never brought to you. I made good the loss you exacted of me, whether snatched by day or snatched by night. Of the 20 years that I spent in your household, I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flocks. Avadati arba'as reishana b'shtei b'notecha v'sheish shanim b'sonecha. I served you, avadati. In 42, God had not the God of my father and God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac, been with me, you would have sent me away empty-handed. He took notice of my plight and the toil of my hands and gave judgment last night. Lulei Hashem Avi Elohe Avraham Upachad Yitzchak Hayali Ata Rekam Shilachtani Et Oni Ve'et Yigia Kapai Ra'a Elokim V'yochach Emesh. Oni, the oppression that was promised, has been fulfilled in Jacob. And similarly, V'yochach Emesh, God has, as promised, God has dealt with the nation that oppresses him. And Levan and Jacob has gone out berachush gadol with a great flock and possessions, with wonderful possessions, as promised in Brit Bein Betarim. So there's the sense that specifically the Brit Bein Betarim, the covenant of the pieces, has been fulfilled in many ways on Jacob, and as Avraham was promised, the fourth generation will return here. Abraham is the first, Isaac is the second, Jacob is the third, and his children will be returning to the land of Israel with him, the fourth generation. And when you think about Jacob's trip to Laban in that way, Jacob's trip to Haran in that way, then the whole peace, the whole sojourn, has a whole different significance. We understand the great nation growing, the birth of the tribes, is very much parallel to the nation growing that takes place in the first chapter of Shemot. In fact, there's many, many linguistic parallels in chapter 30, verse 25. Yaakov says to Laban, Shalcheini, send me away, which evokes, of course, Shlach et ami v'yavduni, let my people go, as it's usually translated in English. Similarly, at the end of chapter 30, verse 43, it says, v'yifrotz ma'od ma'od, echoing the land that Jacob's family grew very, very much, echoing again the language of Egypt. Now, there's so much that could be said about this incredible parallel, and the way Jacob serves as Jacob's trip to Haran is a miniature slavery in Egypt, and similarly, the going out of Haran is a miniature going exodus, if you will. I don't have time to study it in depth, but what struck me very much this year, in no small part because of my work with the social justice track, is the avdut, the service, the slavery. And for me, it really sharpened the parallel between Egypt and Haran, really sharpened a question for me about what is really happening for Jacob there, because he's not exactly a slave. And yet the knowledge of that comparison certainly will influence our reading of both Jacob's actions as well as Laban's actions. Interestingly, the actions of Jacob in the way he served Laban are cited by the Rambam, by Maimonides, as a climactic, in his climactic ending of the laws of hire, the employee-employer relationships. And he says as follows, just as the employer is enjoined not to rob the wages of the poor or else to withhold them, so too the employee is commanded not to steal from the employer by wasting time here and there, such that the entire day is expended in deceitful sloth. Rather, the employee must be strict about his use of time. A very powerful Rambam in the days of email and Facebook. And he continues, the employer is commanded or is obligated to use all of his energies. Jacob the Tzaddik, the righteous Jacob, proclaimed that he served Laban, quote, with all of his strength, and therefore he was rewarded for his efforts in this world as well, as it states, in quotes, the man increased exceedingly much. And so Jacob is being used as the Rambam's example of an employee who gave himself over completely to his work, dedicated himself entirely with all of his strength. And in fact, as the Torah reads in real time, as it tells over the 20 years of Laban's house, they seem to be great ones. He arrives in Haran. When Yaakov arrives in Haran, he really has nothing. He arrives there empty-handed, and he spends there a month. And only then does Laban say to Jacob, "You're my hachiachiata va'avdatani chinam. You are just because you're my kinship. Should you serve me avadatani for nothing? Tell me what your wages will be." And it seems from the perspective of Jacob as though that month, even though he's working, the work is almost not noticed in Jacob's mind. He's happy to be there. He's happy to find himself in a space of security, which is something that we understand, that we know from many refugees' stories. Once you leave the vulnerability of not knowing where your next meal will come from and not knowing where you'll be able to sleep that night, the ability to have some place to work is a treat. And in fact, that seems as though perhaps that's how Jacob experiences it at the beginning. And it's Laban who actually raises the issue of, "Let me pay, what shall I pay you for your work?" And then he says, but already right from the beginning, Jacob is aware of his vulnerability again, and he says, "Avdecha sheva shanim berachel bitcha ktana, I will serve you for 7 years for your younger daughter Rachel." And this expression, "Rachel bitcha haktana," has become a modern Hebrew expression when you feel that you have to specify with somebody to the greatest detail. Surely Laban knows exactly who Rachel is, but Jacob feels that it's necessary to specify to the very most specific of details. "You know Rachel, your younger daughter," as a way of showing that he can't be sure that Laban really understands, or that Laban wants to understand, or that he's anticipating. In fact, he is anticipating that later on he will wake up and behold, after 7 years, find that in fact he's married Leah and he's been deceived. So right from the beginning, we see that there is even though Jacob works for 7 years, and they were in his eyes as a very few days because of his tremendous love for her. He loved her so much he didn't even notice the working that he did for 7 long years. The deception already shows something about the inequity of the working relationship. That being said, then after the deception, Jacob is forced to marry Rachel and then work for another 7 years in order to pay for her, if you will, and then after 14 years, he says to Laban, "I'd like to go." Laban says, "Name your price. I'll give you a raise, anything you want," and Jacob is able to name his price, it seems. And only when Jacob does exceedingly well does Jacob feel that Laban's that Levon is Levon's sons and Levon are no longer with him, Kitzmol Shilshom. They are looking at him in a different way than they had been looking at him before. And this gives me this very distinct feeling that before things had been okay. Before, Jacob had been working very hard. Maybe the working conditions weren't everything that one could want. But overall, he wasn't unhappy. Suddenly, he's endangered. Things are miserable only after things are going exceedingly well for Jacob. And so Jacob, during this time, is apparently not miserable in his work. He may be miserable, but he's not discontented with his work. He doesn't seek to leave. And he has tremendously productive years. He goes out with a rechush gadol, with a wonderful fortune, not just flock, but also family. And he comes home shalem, it says in the beginning of the next chapter. He comes home whole. Now, Rashi understands that whole, despite the fact that he was at Levon's house, perhaps he was endangered in Levon's house. But I'd like to suggest that perhaps the very being in Levon's house empowered him in some ways to become shalem, to be complete. So the tremendous productivity and the dedication with which Jacob serves Levon really highlights the tension between Jacob's behavior and the actions of Levon. We already spoke about Jacob's, the deception that Levon does with the marrying of Rachel, and Leah. But for Jacob, this is really only brought into focus and made explicit when Jacob's already out of Levon's house in chapter 31, verses 38 through 42, which I will read to you. It says, "These 20 years I have spent in your service. Your ewes and your she-goats never miscarried, nor did I feast on rams from your flock." Meaning here Jacob's making a claim, I served you with tremendous dedication. He's not saying I did anything beyond, above and beyond. There's no legal claim here. Just I was the best I could possibly be. And now he makes a complaint. That which was torn by beasts, I never brought to you. I myself made good the loss. You exacted it of me, whether snatched by day or snatched by night. This is already a complaint, because such is the work of a shepherd. Sometimes beasts will be torn. And a shepherd is, from a legal perspective, not expected to make up the loss unless the loss involves some sort of, he's not expected to make up the loss if it's not his fault. If it involves some sort of negligence on his part, then he is expected to make up the loss. And here, Jacob's boss, Levon, demands payment for anything that was snatched, whether it be by day or by night, no matter what happened. Similarly, the working conditions were terrible. Often, scorched heat ravaged me by day and frost by night, and sleep fled from my eyes. Now that Jacob has left Levon's house, he can say exactly how things were. His working conditions were unbearable. He was terrible heat, terrible frost. He had unfairly long hours. He didn't have a chance to sleep. Of the 20 years that I spent in your household, I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 for your flocks, and you changed my wages time and again. He said, in Hebrew it says, aseret monim, which means perhaps literally 10 times. And we know from any work in workers' rights, the changing wages is really the number one no-no. Had not the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac been with me, you would have sent me away empty-handed. You would have never paid me at all. But God took notice of my plight and the toil of my hands, and he gave judgment last night. So this list of Levon's misdeeds reads like a very much like a to a list of the violations for the social seal that my social justice class has been working with recently. This in it, the poor conditions for in the work itself, the poor payment, the unfair changing of the wages, and the fines, which is a very common way for employers to penalize and their employees and to make a profit. So there seems to be seeing the avdut, the slavery in light of Exodus, and the parallel to the Brit Bein Haptarim highlights the terribleness of Laban, but it also creates a tremendous wonderment about Jacob. How could he work with so much dedication? How could the years have been so personally productive for him? Shouldn't they have been? Wouldn't we have expected them to be just terrible, terrible times? And I think what's amazing here is that an appropriate message to take away is that although it's certainly never justified for an employer, and certainly nor is it expected that the employee should submit to these terrible conditions in the way that Jacob did. Perhaps it's possible to imagine that even in very difficult conditions, it's possible for the to make the best of a bad situation and to even grow in the face of tremendous adversity. I'd like to share in my final moments a couple of sources that we've been working with in my social justice class about the working relationship. The Mishpate Uziel, Rav Uziel, who was a chief rabbi in the early part of the century, previous century, is asked, what about the question of life insurance? Is the employer required to provide life insurance for his employees? And Rav Uziel says essentially, only if you negotiate it. You have to negotiate. The worker isn't entitled by definition to those things, but he has the right to demand that and to negotiate those conditions for himself. And Rav Uziel says then on behalf of the worker, but the worker, the relationship is only a legitimate working relationship if the work is done of his free will. If you force the conditions if there are circumstances of force on the worker, then anything that goes wrong in the workplace will be something that the employer will be held responsible for, whether or not he has insurance. And that the only time that the employer can remain morally upstanding is if the employee has consented of his own free will to be part of to enter into that working agreement. And so he says it could be very important in order that the employee wouldn't enter willingly into a working relationship in a place where he wasn't going to be getting life insurance and proper conditions, and if you don't give it to him once he demands it, even if he's coerced into working against his will because of some sort of circumstances, you will be held responsible from a moral perspective for having not provided him with those good conditions. And I think that is something that we need to think about very much, especially when you think about Jacob, the way he came in such a vulnerable position. He really didn't have a lot of choices. And we can imagine very often that employees may find themselves in that situation of forced circumstances, if you will. So the employer, be they a government or a corporation or a family needing a home health aid, needs to be very careful to ensure that the worker comes in with enough dignity that he's capable of agreeing freely to the working conditions. I wanted to raise one more source in in closing, that even in the context of an agreement, that agreement is very necessary, but still runs the risk of undermining our humanity. The Mishnah in Bava Metzia tells a story of a rabbi who contracts day laborers on the basis of salary and food. And upon hearing that his when his father hears that he's contracted with the workers on the basis of salary and food, his father panics. Go out very quickly. Even if you would serve the workers, kesudat shlomo b'sha'atan, if you would serve them a meal that were similar to the meals that King Solomon was served in his day, which the Gemara tells us were tremendous meals, lo yatsati dechovato, you haven't really given him what he truly needs. Shehem b'nei Avraham, Yitzchak, v'Yaakov, because they, your workers, are the sons of princes. They are the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. There's no way to possibly be able to give them everything they deserve. And the father panics and says, you must go out immediately and specify with the workers that you're providing them with food means just beans and bread. In my opinion, the workers knew full well that they weren't going to be served stuffed goose and other gourmet delights. Rather, the message was intended to the employer. Know who you're dealing with here. You may pay them simple wages. You may serve them bread and beans, but you have to recognize their infinite human worth. You're not giving them everything that they deserve, but only what you're able to. Don't imagine, as Levon tried to do, that you don't owe any debt to your workers because they get what they deserve. Remember that Levon said his response to Jacob's claim was, the daughters are my daughters, the children are my children, and the flocks are my flocks. All that you see is mine. Meaning, Levon doesn't feel any guilt. He makes an excuse saying, everything that you got off of my back, if you will. And it's very easy for us as employers to feel that we don't really owe any debt to our workers. Rather, understand that truly giving them all they really deserve is an absolute impossibility. We wish we could provide our employees more, but we're unable to. To summarize, we begin by noting that some of the ways that Jacob's journey to and from Haran echoes the covenant of the halves, and thus makes Jacob's sojourn there a miniature Egyptian slavery. And with that, those glasses on, we saw Jacob's work in a magnified light. While he has been indeed terribly abused, he's met those challenges with unending grace and turned oppression into opportunity. And in that context, we looked briefly at two characteristics of an ethical employer-employee relationship. First, the genuine consent of both parties. And second, a deep understanding of the infinite human worth of the individual worker, much beyond whatever service he or she is providing you. Jacob finds redemption in work, even in the face of abuse. May we manage to save ourselves from being Levon, and when faced with manipulative situations like that Jacob faced, may we also be able to endure it with faith, that it can come also to our benefit. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Dr. Hamburg-Kassoy. Thank you to you for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.